On the phone with me tonight is one of my all-time heroes, and I say that in a very sincere and just impressed manner. And I've worked with a lot of famous musicians, but this guy to me is more famous than anybody I've worked with because he was such an important part of my teenage years, which, as any parent can tell you, is one of the hardest years to capture a child's attention. Merle Kessler is with me tonight on the phone. Merle, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Listen, I got to tell you, and so just go ahead and blush quietly to yourself, but I got to tell you, you and Monty Python are basically the reason that I'm crazy now. But seriously, are the things that kept me going through some very difficult times. I had a brain tumor as a child and had some illnesses and stuff. And you guys are what developed my weird sense of humor, so I'm giving you all the glory and all the blame. But
well, good. I'm glad we're, damaging people at a time.
But I just, you're just, to me, you're such an amazing person. I don't understand why. Like, I would like to see you run for president. I don't understand. Your wit and your insight are so profound to me. And
I wouldn't want that job.
Oh, well, that's all the reason more you should have it. But it's
mind of having a Dennis Miller's career. That would be good.
See, to me, it's funny you mention that, because to me, you were like the precursor to Dennis Miller. Like, before he ever did a rant, Ian Scholes was out there cooking it. So that kind of brings me very nicely to the Ian Scholes character. And I don't know if you're tired to talking about Ian Scholes or not, but some of the most intelligent commentary on what it is to be a human being and what it is to live in our society has come to me from Ian Scholes. One of my favorites, I'm serious about this, one of my favorites, this is not particularly, I guess, this is not going to change the universe, but one of the funniest things I think you ever did was your commentary on 2020 on 60 Minutes, which I thought was hilarious. You said you wanted to see Barbara Walters quaking with rage or some phrase to that effect. To me, being on 60 Minutes is a pretty big success. Tell me, how did you get into the business of being, a social commentator, a comedian, an actor? What is it? How did you come to this place?
Well, I was in grad school at the University of Iowa.
Okay.
And we had no, prospects. I was in getting a degree in English and in theater, both of which are, not big career moves. There's a bunch of other fellows there, and we decided, we just started doing basically skits. We were ourselves in the student union bars around town. Then we decided, let's try to do this. So we made a decision to, we called ourselves Duck's Breath Mystery Theater.
Yeah.
And then we moved out to San Francisco and then did pretty well until we kind of, burned out. But we were still friends, and we still do things from time to time, now like 25, 30 years later.
Who was it? I mean, because Duck's Breath is where I first was introduced to your character of Ian Scholes and all the other.
Right.
For those of you who are maybe not as familiar with that character, I'm sure you remember. They'll remember like Randy the Redwoods, and they'll remember to ask Dr. Science
and Dr. Science.
Yeah, Dr. Science, and which were pretty big. I guess my question to you is: so you're in Iowa, where there's not much but corn and cattle, I guess, and maybe a little soy, and apparently some damn fine comedy. And so, how did you decide to make the move to L.A.? Was it the quintessential place to be if you wanted to be entertainment at that time?
Well, we decided not to go to L.A. Actually, we decided to go to San Francisco.
Oh, San Francisco.
A little less,
Plus, they have streetcars.
Yeah,
and they got streetcars. Who doesn't want a streetcar? But, did you have, like, day jobs that you had to fulfill, or were you making money strictly in comedy?
Well, yeah, we worked, temp. But we actually started fairly soon, making money. Of course, this was in California, this thing called Prop 13. And before that passed, there was a lot of money for, little colleges to just, have entertainment come through. So we used to do a lot of local colleges. And then when Prop 13 passed, all that, money dried up. And then we started doing national touring.
And now I followed you. My time with Duck's Breath and knowing you, I don't know how current what I was hearing was in the 80s and the 90s. So I kind of lost track of what you were doing, kind of in the 90s.
We sort of in the 90s we kind of fell apart. It was just the touring got to us, And each of, like, well, Jim was doing Randy of the Redwoods, which is sort of eating up, you know, most of his time.
Yeah.
And then Ian Scholes, I was getting a lot of, you know, I had a book deal and, you know, doing stuff for Nightline, and there's a lot of stuff happening. So everybody, we all just sort of drifted off into our own little, you know, solo projects.
What?
But, you know, we're still friends. I'm working on a project with Bill Allard and Jim Turner right now, actually.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear it. Well, and tell me about, let's talk about what, how did you become inspired to make this character of Ian Scholes? I got to say, one of the greatest, I use when I perform, I'm primarily a musician, with no brain mouth barrier. It's kind of how I think of myself. When I perform, I bill myself as sexy as Elvis with half the fat, but I wish that I had come up with your tagline of I gotta go. I mean, how did you come up with this character that's just such genius?
Well, this originally, that character was sort of designed, I intended it to make fun of kind of social commentators.
Yeah.
Back in that time, there was like Rolling Stone and Esquire. There's all these like kind of, you know, Hunter Thompson types.
Sure.
You know, who did like, oh, here's going to be an article about whatever, you know, Woodstock. And it was all about them, you know?
Yeah.
And I just thought this was really funny. So I intended the character to sort of make fun of all that stuff.
And then karma bit you in the ass.
And people started kind of, you know, taking him seriously. I mean, not seriously, but as if, you know, as if his opinions mattered.
Yeah.
So,
and how do
I
you
started.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, that's how it started. It's still pretty much that. I still like, one of the nice things about having a persona is I can sort of totally mock myself and undermine my own points of view.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if I were doing this as Merle Kessler, I wouldn't do that. But, you know, as Ian Scholes, like, you know, he's kind of a self-serving fellow, you know. I mean, you sort of have to take him with a grain of salt, or you know where he's coming from.
Yeah, a bit of a narcissist, I guess, in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. What about, you know, I saw something, and I'm trying to remember which team you were rooting for, but I was just Googling you the other day for fun because, you know, I have no life. And I was Googling you, and I saw a thing that you were talking about baseball and how annoying it was. Was it the Angels Stadium or which stadium was it?
Oh, the stadium in San Jose, I think it was.
Okay, and you were, it was great because I don't know if you were there as Merle Kessler or Ian Scholes, but it was, you're talking about how crazy it was to have internet access where you could watch the game and stuff on your phone when you're actually at the game.
Well, yeah, I think all that stuff is nuts, and I don't get it, you know. But I don't have a smartphone. My phone is stupid.
You don't. I think
why would I want another screen in my life?
There are a lot of screens. There are a lot of screens. I'm blind, of course, so you know, you can have as many screens as you want around me. I don't really care. But I do think that's interesting because, I mean, it's little gems like that, though, that I think are so profound from what you have to say. I mean, I think it's kind of important for someone like Ian Scholes to be there to point out the absurdity of some of the things that we do. So I think that's one of the things I love best about the character. And I, by the way, I have I don't know if you remember this. I know you just celebrated your 60-somethingth birthday. We won't say the number.
It was Monday, yeah. 63, Monday.
I remember. And the thing is, I remember your book, actually. I think it was with Simon & Schuster, if I recall. But anyway, I had the audio version of that, which I don't know if it was abridged or not. But you actually read it. So, I mean, I what do you do to prepare yourself? I mean, because I don't know if you've ever listened. I mean, again, I kind of think of you as the forerunner. I mean, and this may be my skewed perception, but I think of you as sort of the forerunner of Dennis Miller and some of the crazy rants that later happened with George Carlin. So how do you prepare yourself to do that? Because there's a lot of words in what you say. I mean, it's not just like gibberish.
I wouldn't call it a gift, but I can read really fast.
A speed reader.
So that's pretty much it. It's a bad habit that sort of turned into, like, you know, a gimmick, I guess.
Only in America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The idea is, like, you know, I have to talk really fast because, you know, I'm not supposed to be in the studio, so I better get this over with quick. Someone catches me.
Hey, yeah, time is money.
Exactly.
But it is true. I mean, because, I mean, so do you, because you said something to me when we were trading emails. You said, I have a horrible memory. And I thought, how can he possibly have a horrible memory? with the stuff that he says. So do you actually read that stuff, like on a teleprompter?
Well, yeah, I just read it on the air. When I do live shows, which I do occasionally, I memorize it. But you know, and as you get older, my memory's not, you know, it's kind of shot. So
now is that
anything I can do to make it easier on myself? I do.
Is your memory shot from too much time in the more risque parts of San Francisco?
It's just a function of aging, I think. You know, like everybody else, you know, I walk across the room to get something, and halfway there, like, well, what did I come over here to get? You know.
Yeah, I'm too young for that, so I'm sure I'll get there. But in my case, it's really bad because I'm like, wow, what did I come to get, and where the hell am I? So it gets even worse. Tell me about who your influences and inspirations were when you were coming up as an entertainer.
Well, as a kid, I really liked, James Thurber, all those people, you know, from the 30s,
yeah,
and the 50s. And I used to read them in the New Yorker, books in the library, and I just thought, wow, geez, there's this beautiful world in New York where these guys are just out there and they're having cocktails and they're, you know,
waxing
one-liners. But you know, and I suddenly realized in high school that, oh, geez, that scene was over like 30 years ago. So I guess I won't be going to Manhattan anytime soon. Also, a guy named S.J. Perlman is my huge hero. I still think he's, you know, just so funny. And he's like a master of like a parody, like any kind of genre you can imagine. He, you know, he'll make fun of it and in the voice of whatever the genre is.
That's awesome.
And also, you know, Nichols and May, Jonathan Winters.
Oh, sure.
All those comics that sort of were kind of broke the barriers in the 60s, like, you know, George Carlin and Richard Pryor.
Sure.
And the Brits, of course, all of the Brits, not just Monty Python, but there's a lot of, you know, British comedians, right, humorists right now that I really like Mitchell and Webb and Matt Berry.
Sure.
I also, like, try to find things that irritate me, and then I can try to inhabit that and make fun of it.
I think that's what Lewis Black does. So,
yeah.
Yeah. He just takes the things that, you know, make him go a little mental. And isn't that amazing that we can make that into a career? I mean, it's fantastic. What do you do as far as if you were to recommend how someone could get into the entertainment business, what would you say?
Well, I would not take my path. I'm not a stand-up comic, which makes it a little weird, you know, because
yeah.
I read my stuff. I don't, you know, work my material on the road. I mean, I've done stand-up, but it's not really for me, you know. It's
yeah.
Just, you know, working a room for laughs doesn't appeal to me.
Gotcha.
Because I figure, you know, that's... I don't care if you laugh or not. I guess, you know, some of you will think this is funny, some of you won't. It'll be over quick, and I'm out of here. You know, I mean, that's sort of my attitude. You know, I think it's funny. You know, if you don't,
that's okay. Yeah,
it's your problem or mine.
Yeah,
you know, I'm not going to worry about it.
So I mean, you know, what do you prefer to write or to do things that are taped as opposed to live?
Yeah, writing is sort of. I consider myself a writer.
Who, okay,
you know, performs. I guess, you know.
And what kind of, I'm sorry to dwell on it, but I just want to know what Ian's going to do, if there's anything planned for Ian in the near future, because I would love to see another book.
Well, I'm a part of a public radio show called Philosophy Talk.
Oh, okay.
Which airs in San Francisco and around the country, and you can stream it weekly for free at philosophytalk.org. And basically, that's a radio show to Stanford philosophy professors, and they, you know, sort of talk about issues of the day from a philosophical perspective.
Sure.
And I, as Ian Scholl, I'm sort of the Andy Rooney guy at the end of that show. And I do like a three-minute bit at the end of each show.
Now, is that weekly?
Yeah.
And, And so that's good. So you're still. I want to make sure. And are your writings? Do you post blog? Do you do like blog posts on a regular basis?
I had a blog, but I stopped it. But I'm going to start a new one. Probably sometime over the next couple of months.
Okay, because I looked for a blog for you and I couldn't find it, but that could be my limitation.
There's an old one that's probably still up called DBMT.
Okay.
And you can find old posts there, but I haven't posted there in about a year and a half.
Okay.
But
so clearly you need to get back to work.
Yeah. Well, that started. I think it was our 30th anniversary, and I started the blog to kind of promote that.
Uh huh.
And that turned into kind of a more of a personal blog, and then. I don't know. It just seemed like, it's like too much like every other blog. So I just sort of.
Now, are you a professional?
A blog is like having a rabbit, You have to take care of it and you don't see the real benefits.
So, yeah. If you don't feed it, it's going to die. I got you.
Right.
I'm with you. And so do you find that you're a perfectionist to the point of like, well, this isn't good enough, so I'm not going to do it? Or,
not a perfectionist, but I do like to see some kind of financial benefit from my writings.
Well, that makes
hard
perfect
to do these days.
That makes perfect sense. Well, with that's actually a great sort of question. Like, I mean, you guys, and I may be wrong about this because I'm on the outside, but it seems that the great public radio era is sort of over, and that was one of the things that sort of helped you guys along.
As far as I'm concerned, because I did a couple things for them a couple years ago. And what I used to do is I just, here's the tape, Eric, after they approved the script, everything.
Sure.
But the last time I recorded, there was like three people on the line with me.
You're kidding me.
Could you slow it down a little bit? Could you do this? And it's like, this isn't rocket science. do you really need three consultants for like a, I don't know.
Well, I guess the other thing to that I would say, and I have this, my main job is like a producer, engineer. So my main thing is that, like, look, if you don't want what I have to offer, get somebody else. But don't try to micromanage, the art.
Obviously, these are young people that had no idea who I was. And it's also like, could you slow down a little bit? It's like, well.
That's kind of the point.
What's the point of that?
What is your favorite experience as a performer or writer or anything that you've done? What's something that stands out to you as sort of a watershed for you as an artist?
Well, a couple of things. As far as Duck's Breath goes, I think our high point was we sold out two shows. We sold out a show at the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis and added another show and sold that one out.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Of course, the next night we played for 10 people in Rockford, Illinois. And the guy tried to pay us in cocaine. There you go.
That's awesome. Well, whatever it takes.
And then I had an Ian Scholes show, and it was very popular in San Francisco, and we wound up taking it to New York, and that was really rewarding.
That's awesome. No, was that like a stage show?
Yeah, it was a stage show. I have a writing partner here in San Francisco who is a composer, and we do once a year or so an Ian Scholes review, you might say. That's a combination of commentaries and original songs.
Now, I've always noticed something about Duck's Breath, and I don't know if this is who this is credited to, but as a blind person, I always loved the sound design. I always thought the sound effects were great. I'm thinking of that skit, and I always thought the music was great, like the Bob Johnson's Plumbing Contractors. And I always loved the One Bad Person Writing. Were you guys all musicians as well?
Well, we always liked music, and we could all sing. So we it's like another thing that, like, well, we should incorporate this if we can, we can sing and do harmonies and, because it's, for an audience, it's kind of surprising,
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're out there laughing, all of a sudden, hey, these guys can sing too?
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy. So now, do you play an instrument?
I play guitar.
Excellent.
A little bit.
All right. So you're the old folk singer, yeah.
Yes, I was an old folk singer.
And I don't know, a lot of people may not get that reference. But anyway, that's the good thing. You know what? As long as you can play in the people's key, which is the key of G, then everything's okay.
Yeah, actually, I'm learning a song in the key of G for a gig I have next week.
Now, are you? Is it a comedy gig or like a serious?
It's a live taping of Philosophy Talk.
Oh, okay.
The show I was talking about, and when they do the live shows, they sort of do them in segments, so it's kind of a, you know, just a little extra value thing for the audience.
That's awesome.
We do a couple songs in between these segments.
That is too cool. Are they all original music as well, or?
Well, you know, there was supposed to be, cause, you know, but it's since it's just one topic.
Yeah.
You know, I can write one song, but, you know, we're writing two songs for the same topic. So we do a cover and an original.
Okay, that seems reasonable. And what's your cover going to be? What are you learning?
I'm doing a Rock Pile song.
Okay.
When I write the book. Do you know that song?
I do not. I'm going to look it up now.
The book about my love. It's like, you know, Nick Lowe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now I know who that is.
Cool song. Because I love Nick Lowe. He's one of my heroes.
Now, do you have like a strict musical release? That's just you, like, playing guitar and singing?
Not really.
Well, you probably should.
My Joshua, who's my writing composer partner, we put out some music together, but it's usually mixed up with the some spoken word stuff. You
know? Oh, I see. Okay, like, okay.
From our recordings of our live shows and that sort of thing.
I got you. Now I know that there are people that are going to know who you are on the show and people that aren't, but I want to know, and this is actually one of the main reasons I contacted you, and it's just sort of as a, well, what the hell? Let me see if he'll be on the show. How do you find Ian Scholl's stuff? How do you find Duck Express stuff? How do you find the other projects you're involved with?
Well, Ian Scholl has a website, but it's really messed up right now. Somebody's hacked it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You see, you should stop looking at that porn at your age. You really should. That's how it got hacked.
Well,
anyway.
I have to shut that down and just start it over.
Okay.
But, you know, I haven't done that yet, have I? Because you can go to drscience.com.
Okay.
And go to the store there, which is called S-Mart, and there's a bunch of Ian Scholl CDs, Duck Spreads, DVDs, and... yeah, like that.
I would love to see you start a merchandise line, like a clothing line that all said, "I gotta go." Have you done this? Because I would wear it. I mean, it could be pink, and I would wear it.
You used to have T-shirts, but, you know, we don't do that so much anymore because we don't perform, and it's, you know, like, who'd buy them, you know, like, except for the
crazy people like me.
To remember who we are.
Yeah,
you know?
the crazy people like me. Yeah, but it's well, and what about? Well, I guess my other quick question for you is. In regard to, you know, finding a career path, as you say, you know, it was a different time. But what do you think is the wave of the future for people that want to do, you know, what you do? Because, I mean, basically all I want in our life is music and bad jokes, and I have that, so I feel successful. What do you think is the secret to living that kind of life?
Well, I think a lot of it's just luck. I mean, look at, like, I'm having a brain fart. I can't remember his name.
That's all right.
The director that did created Freaks and Geeks.
Oh, right.
You know, Seth Rogen and all those guys. It just seems like, you know, they created this... One guy had some luck with this one show, and they all, like, got to know each other, and they all collaborate with each other. Yeah, it seems like it's kind of luck. I mean, you just need to luck into the right combination of people who, you know, have the, a commercially viable idea that's also rewarding for the participants.
So, I mean, do you feel like you should just do what you do and just keep doing it till somebody likes it?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah,
because that's kind of my feeling is, like, you know, be who you are. And eventually, if you do it long enough and become, you know, hone your craft, other people will recognize that there's something there, you know, and it may not be for everybody. But, I mean, like, you know, you look at Family Guy and some of those great, you know, talking about some of that stuff and some of those amazing shows that just seem to, you know, pop out of nowhere. I'm sure they worked on them for a long time before they were successful. But and do you what kind of goals do you have in the future? What is it you have left to do that you haven't done?
Well, right. I'm sort of, you know, I'm basically semi-retired, so I have all these ideas for books that I haven't had time to get to, and that's what I'm hoping to get to.
Well, I hope that you write them, and I hope that they will be in a format that I can read. So, you know.
Well, I'm actually working on a book now for, it'll be out on, in iBooks, which is on iPad.
Oh, sure, I can read those. And what is this book called?
I don't know when that's going to come out exactly.
Do you have a title?
Basically, it's kind of a parody of presidential memoirs.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Jim Turner, who is Randy the Redwoods, he has this character called Sterling Dalzell, who's like this total nut who's running for president, but it's not an election year. So anyway, these are his memoirs, like, why I'm running for president, that sort of thing.
That is fantastic. So you guys co-write this, and how does that process work?
Well, I'm writing the book sort of in his voice. I know the character, and we're hoping that it'll what we'd like to do is have this memoir, and because, you know, iBooks are kind of interactive.
Yeah.
When you get to the end of the book, it'll jump into a movie. It'll be a documentary about Sterling Dalzell, so it'll be kind of a multimedia kind of thing.
Very cool. Now, do you try to keep up with stuff like that? I mean, you try to keep up with trends and what's hot and what's going to, you know, tempt people the most to pay for your product?
Well, you know, no. But Bill gave me an iPad, and I just hated it. I hated everything about it.
But
I'm writing for the iPad, so, you know.
So are you?
I just write. It's okay. Here, you do all that stuff.
Yeah. See, a little bit of a Luddite, you know.
Well, not so much. People accuse me of that, but it's also like, you know, how much stuff like that do we need? I mean, you know, like the iPhone. I mean, everyone's waiting in line to get the new iPhone. There was one just like 6 months ago, wasn't there? I mean, it's just ridiculous to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like the iPhone for a reason that is important, and that is it's the most accessible phone for the blind, believe it or not. It wasn't for the first three incarnations, but when they came out with the iPhone 4, it became really accessible for the blind, and so I like it for that reason. But I totally understand what you're saying. The iPhone 5 is so – there's so little difference from the iPhone 5 and the iPhone 4S, which is what I have. It does seem a little strange to spend all that money and time on something that's really no better than the thing you had before.
Yeah, it's incremental better.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Than the other one.
It's like it's
also funny because you listen to, you know, when it comes out, all the tech people have to write about it, you know.
Sure.
And they were just like twiddling their thumbs, like, oh, okay, you know, this is a little bit bigger, and you know that, and the, you know, the Apple Maps aren't as good as Google, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
It's true.
I don't know. I just, you know, as I guess I get older, you know, I don't like Kindle, and you know, I'm set in my ways. I guess I like to read books and.
I think if I could read a paperback book,
yeah.
I would probably feel the same way. I think there is something, you know, visceral about holding the book in your hand and that kind of thing. Of course, I can understand that thought process.
Well, yeah, audiobooks and stuff. You know, I like all that stuff too.
Yeah,
put them in the car, and you know.
Well, you're someone that drives. They don't let me drive for this mysterious reason. But yeah, I mean, you know, I do think audiobooks are great. Obviously, that's my passion because that's all that I can really access. I can read iBooks with the iPhone. You know, it's a little stilted because it's being read by an artificial voice with no sense of cadence. But you know, you get through.
That stuff gets better all the time too, though.
It does. I would like to see the Merle Kessler voice for the iPhone.
Well, actually, some years ago, I was had an idea to have like a bot, you know, online that you could call, you do it just, you know, you could have a conversation with it because you can do this, you know.
Yeah.
So it would just be me, you know, and it would all be pre-recorded stuff, but it would be an algorithm that would, whatever the question was, it would trigger, you know, like X amount of responses.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not like you're having a conversation with me.
And
got pretty far along with that, but there just wasn't the right program. I imagine there is one now, but you know, I sort of moved on to other things.
Because now is that would you make your friends talk to that as well, or just strangers?
Well, I was going to put this online. Like, you could, it would be on like an Ian Scholes website. You could just talk to Ian.
I know, and I'm playing with you. That was my poor sarcasm. But I do think that's really cool. Talk to Ian. Now, what you ought to do if you want to make some mega bucks, you know. You ought to start doing custom-made greeting cards, you know. You can have Ian Scholes, you know, send a personalized greeting.
Well, if friend of ours has this idea, which I actually think is a good idea. I don't know if I'd want to devote much time to it. But he wants to have a thing that's sort of an adjunct to Google Maps, something like that,
uh-huh.
where you're getting directions.
Yeah.
To have some kind of voice that makes jokes.
I love it.
Be like, you know, why are you going to the grocery store now? Or, you know what I mean? Or,
like the comedy version of Knight Rider.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. It makes fun of you for trying to get somewhere.
Here's the only thing about that. My wife has terrible road rage, and, like, if you made fun of her for missing a turn, it would probably not go well for the car. So you'd have to make sure there was some sort of disclaimer, like, people that have road rage should not buy this product.
Yeah, well, actually, it'd probably be more, you know, jokes about where you're going rather than, you know, personal
yeah.
insults.
That's good. I mean, she would flip.
I guess, Apple is finally open to this because they're kind of resistant to third-party developers.
Sure. Well, you know, they had, I don't, you know, the TomTom had some celebrity voices, like Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some, I don't really watch NASCAR per se, but there's I think there's some NASCAR. I think it's great at sport to nap to. I have this strange, and you may have this experience tonight. I have this strange thing that people dream about me driving after they've met me, and a lot of them dream that I'm driving NASCAR. And I guess they think it's because it's a circle, and all you got to do is turn left at the right time. I'm not sure, but I had a professor who said I didn't get any sleep last night. It's all because of you. And I'm thinking, okay, this is scary. I was like, do I need to help you find a girlfriend? What's the deal here? And he said, no, I kept dreaming you were in NASCAR, and I just kept telling him to let you walk the track, and you could drive it. So anyway, hopefully you won't have that dream tonight. But I do think that you know, that kind of fun thing, the more technology perfects, you know, gets involved in your navigation, the more people are going to need things like little comical voices to make fun of them to keep them awake. You know.
Oh yeah, well, see, that's the other thing. I don't trust that stuff. You know, GPS. I don't like cars talking to me. You know, I mean, it's like I don't own a car either. So. You know,
oh really?
No.
Now you still live in San Francisco?
I live in Oakland now.
Okay.
I got rid of my car 3 years ago, and it made me so much happier.
Well, so is it bicycles or public transportation for you?
Yeah, and then there's a thing called Zipcar, which is kind of like a car sharing program.
Uh huh.
So I can, you know, you enroll in it, and anytime you need a car, you just go online and find the one closest to you. And, you know, it's like $7 an hour.
Dude, I need that. That's what the blind people need. We need,
yeah, it's pretty cool.
We need something like that. I'm really excited about these Google cars now that are able to start driving themselves.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Although I'd be a little leery of that.
Well, I mean, obviously you watch...
I wouldn't want to be in the test marketing group for that.
See, and I would love it. I would love to be, you know, but I think the problem is, I think maybe you were scared by the film 2001. Did Hal get to you?
Oh, and also, you know, what's the Stephen King... car.
Oh yeah, was it Christine, I think?
Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, that thing he made Mega Millions on, yeah.
Yeah, because there are, you know...
Sure.
There are evil cars out there, you know, and if you let them drive...
you gotta know the personality of the car.
You should
always do a background check on any car you let drive you, I think.
Yeah, we don't want sociopathic cars out there. You know?
Listen, I just want to tell you, I appreciate your time more than you can possibly imagine. You have sincerely been a hero to me and been part of keeping me happy and laughing when things were not so great. And I know personally, as someone who performs and stuff, if anyone ever gives me, you know, says that I've made a difference in their life, that means a lot to me. And I appreciate you more than you know. Is there anything coming up or anything you want to share to tell your fans to look out for before I let you go?
No, but Philosophy Talk, yeah. I mean,
I'm subscribing today.
It's a weekly show, and it's on. You know, you can get it free online.
Now, is this PRI or NPR or what?
This is we don't have an actual national. We've sort of been distributing ourselves, so it's actually, you know, NPR. It's produced locally.
Okay.
And but we have it's in like 140 stations nationwide.
Well, I'm going to call ours and make sure we have it. If we don't, I'm going to lobby. So if,
lobby for it, yeah.
If you see a naked blind man on CNN, you know what's going on. Listen, thanks for everything. I appreciate you so much and appreciate your time.
Well, sure. Well, thanks for, you know, the nice words.
You're welcome.